I'm talking to Jonathan Bewley.
That's right.
And we're talking about Jacobs. But let me establish first your own family and your roots. Where do you come from?
France originally, then Cumberland, and in the mid-1600s they became Quakers, and presumably there were Huguenots before that, I'm not certain, and they lived in Cumberland, as I say, and when they became Quakers, the following of George Fox, who founded the Quakers in 1643, I think it was, they objected strongly to paying a tithe of their income to the local cleric, as was the custom. And so the local cleric, in true Christian fashion, put the bailiffs in, put the furniture out on the street to sell in order to collect his tithe. And locals wouldn't buy it anyway, because they felt that this was most unjust. But he, however, felt he'd had enough and packed up and came to Ireland in early 1650s. And arrived in Waterford. One suspects that possibly he was on the way to America and took refuge in Waterford from a storm and then stayed there. And they moved up to the Midlands, Moat and areas like that, and have been here ever since. And my father's mother was a Cliburn, and her ancestor, John Cliburn, he came over to Ireland with Cromwell's army, and they were stationed in the Midlands, and he went to Moat. He was told to burn down the Quaker meeting house in Moat with the Quakers in it. And he went along, and he was so impressed that he decided to abandon Cromwell and join the Quakers in Moat. And there are still Cliburns living in Moat, his descendants. So we've been here since 1650, and people still regard the Bewleys, I think, as blow-ins. But
take me back to your grandfather. What was his name?
William Thomas.
Oh, where did Thomas live?
Thomas lived, first of all, in Park Drive, I think it was, in Ranelagh, or Rathmines. And then he lived in Sandford Hill, which is in Ranelagh, which is now Gonzaga School. There were two houses on that, Sandford Hill and Sandford Grove. And my uncle, William Bewley, was a bachelor, and he didn't want one huge house, much less two, and he sold it to the Jesuits after the war, and Gonzaga was founded on the site, and he moved to a smaller house in Dundrum.
And what was his businesses?
He was in Jacobs also.
And who started Jacobs?
William and Robert Jacob in 1850s started it in Waterford, a huge Quaker settlement in Waterford, yeah. The Jacobs and a lot of them, and they made ship's biscuits. Most of the biscuit factories in the world were started adjacent to ports, because their real business was making ship's biscuits. And the word biscuit means twice baked, biscuit, and they would preserve and keep, and so could be kept on a boat for donkey's years, with nothing worse than weevils, I suspect. But anyhow. Then they branched out. They realised there was a market among the locals to buy more attractive biscuits than ones which were like board with very low moisture contents. And so they made what they called fancy biscuits. And he was travelling back from England, having gone to buy a machine, and he passed through Dublin and spotted a premises available in Bishop Street, and he bought it. And then they moved the factory to Bishop Street, and gradually extended the factory that they owned the whole block over the next succeeding 50 years, making what they call fancy biscuits. That's biscuits with a fat content rather than just water and flour. And all biscuit manufacturers, Huntley & Palmer's, Crawford's, Carr's, all of them started, and ports, and followed that particular history.
Can you tell me the connection between the Jacob and the Bewley? Was that?
I can. I'm only working from my memory, but the Bewleys were not in the biscuit business at all. They were actually there were two separate Bewley businesses in the tea and coffee business. One of them is the Bewleys, which you know of in Grafton Street. The other was my grandfather, and he had a son, and the son didn't seem to know what he wanted to do for a living, and he didn't want to go into the tea business. And the Jacob brothers, William and Robert, ran into financial difficulties in the 1860s, I think, and they needed some money, and the people to approach were other fellow Quakers, and they approached the Bewley, who ran the coffee shop, and said, would he be interested in lending them some money? And he lent them £2,000 on the understanding they took his son into the business, which they did. And now, I'm sure that's verifiable. I know what is verifiable, that there is a minute in the minute book paid back, I think it was Thomas Bewley, £2,000 today, thank God, in about 1880.
Okay, and what ancestor was that of yours?
I know, I'm a little vague here. I have a family tree, which you can borrow and have a look at if you want to. I'm not a great historian. My grandfather was Thomas Bewley, and his father was William Frederick Bewley, but I think it goes back a generation further than that.
I see. Yeah. So, but the Bewleys were connected to the biscuit business.
From very early on, yeah. And they were always on the commercial side rather than the production and practical side.
I see.
I was the first one who was on the practical side.
Okay. But tell me first about your father. What was your father's name?
Edward Clibborn Bewley.
And so he's
born in 1902.
Okay.
And died in 1979. And he was a chartered accountant. And he went into Bewley's, and he was the first accountant, into Jacob's rather, he was the first accountant employed in Jacob's, and he was a very modest person, so we never talked about what he did or what he didn't do, but I suspect he was the person who brought Jacob's from being a private company to being a public company. They floated on the stock exchange in 1948, two separate companies. I'll go back a little bit. In 1922, when the Free State was founded, exports were prohibited, and he at that stage 50% of the output of Jacob's went exports. I have photographs in Jacob's of huge big cases being nailed together with Singapore and Kuala Lumpur and various exotic names on it, where the biscuits went from Bishop Street to these places. That all stopped. The factory found itself in considerable difficulties then, so they had bought land in Aintree in the beginning of the First War, in middle of the First War, perhaps, and a considerable plot of land, 40 acres or so. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that sometime they would build on that to handle the English trade. Well, it so happened in 1922, when they couldn't export anymore, they got together and they built a factory there which handled England and exports, unfortunately. So the non-exporting policy of the state at the time must have destroyed a fair proportion of the business in Ireland, and other businesses too, I suspect. And the upshot of it was then that the Irish company from then only dealt with the Irish market, and the English company dealt with the rest. Now, by the Irish, I mean total Ireland. So, in 1948, by this stage, the English company, having a huge market of contents of England and the rest of the world, had developed to be much bigger than its parent in Dublin. And they floated two separate companies in 1948, one in Dublin on the Dublin Stock Exchange and one in England on the English Stock Exchange.